Recordings are started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And welcome to the first call on Red Cross Identifier Protections on Monday, the 27th of February, 2017 at 20 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Hi, this is Thomas Rickert. I'm on audio only. I'm on the road, so I'm not able to join the Adobe Connect.
Thank you, Thomas. That is noted. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our facilitator, Bruce Duncan. Please begin.
Thank you, and welcome everybody to the call. The purpose of this call is basically just to confirm the framework for a discussion in Copenhagen on the protection for the Red Cross identifiers, and also to confirm the problem statement, and then just identify what documents we might be able to get produced for people to read in advance. One of the things I should state just before people start speaking is these calls are treated as open calls, and the call will be recorded and made public. So I guess the first item on the agenda here is talking about the process framework for the meeting, and I'll just, I guess, summarise from Mandy's perspective here of the Red Cross. I guess the first thing is that the intent is to have, well, the background is that the ICANN board met and discussed the issues in its meetings in Hyderabad recently or last year. And the board felt that an important next step was to offer the ability to have a facilitated discussion between the GAC that provides public policy advice and the GNSO that develops policy recommendations with respect to the generic top-level domain system. I think one of the important things to understand also just in terms of ICANN's role is that ICANN itself doesn't have the ability to create rules and regulations that can be imposed on other parties. It basically manages the generic top-level domain name system through contract, and each of the contracts ICANN has with both the GTLD registries and GTLD registrars has a provision that says that if policies are developed through a bottom-up community process, which includes receiving public policy advice from the GAC, that those new policies that are created through that process, that through contract, the GTLD operators and the GTLD registrars agree to abide and implement those policies. So effectively, we need to use the policy development process to create those policies, and then the contracts require the contracted parties to adhere to those policies, and ICANN has a contractual compliance department that ensures that the parties adhere to those policies. So that's essentially the mechanism by which ICANN can work with the community to create rules for the operation of the GTLD system. So the purpose of the session in Copenhagen is to have a facilitated discussion is intended to have a good faith mediated dialogue from which the outcomes will be taken back either to the GNSO if the outcome is a suggestion to change the policy in some way, or taken back to the GAC if the GAC wishes to update its formal advice or public policy advice. And that each of those groups have their own processes for either developing GAC advice or developing GNSO policy. And broadly, if the GNSO wants to change its policy recommendations, it would need to go back through the membership and ensure it has input from the members of the GNSO and would also need to go through the public comment processes that are built into the bylaws for developing policy. So those are sort of the broad steps that would need to be taken following Copenhagen if there are changes. The other opportunity is to identify potentially if, I guess the broad options are potential changes to the policy that would be considered by the GNSA, potential changes to the GAC's advice on the public policy issues, and thirdly, it could well be that there are some implementation guidelines that come out that would help make the implementation of the recommended policies effective. And quite a lot of work that was done on that with the introduction of new GTLDs at ICANN. She looked at a lot of implementation issues, including potentially funding governments to raise objections, etc. So those were all implementations of the GNSA policies. I think that's probably the main things. Do I have any questions, I guess, just before going on that introduction? Does anyone have any questions or comments they want to make?
Hello, this is Ashley Heineman. I don't have any comments, but I did just want to let you know that I'm on the phone and not on Adobe Connect.
Okay, thanks, Ashley. There has been a couple of comments, I think, received by Jorge on the proposed process. One comment was after the second paragraph, which is essentially saying, although they commit to make best faith efforts to respect and implement any agreed outcomes, I think one thing we want to be clear, or at least I want to make clear, is I don't see the dialogue being a binding arbitration process where we're reaching some arbitrated outcome that both parties must agree to implement. But I do think that both parties should be working in good faith and prepared to update either their policies or advice based on the outcomes of that dialogue. Does that make sense? Does anyone have a sort of disagreement with that principle? Okay, and then there was one other piece of feedback we received from Jorge, which was in relation to briefing documents, and he suggested an additional line of text. We basically said the briefing document should include a problem statement, the specific international laws that apply to the topic, the relevant treaties, relevant national laws, relevant ICANN bylaws. Jorge had suggested that the policy considerations at stake, including public policy considerations, be included. Essentially, that's what the GAC advice provides us. So under the bylaws that ICANN operates under, the public policy advice from the GAC must be duly taken into account. And so I think what we'll do is we'll update the text that talks about GAC advice. Currently, it just says the GAC advice on the topic. We'll just elaborate that to say the GAC advice on the public policy aspects related to the topic. So just being clear that the GAC provides us advice on the public policy considerations. And then the other edits that Jorge had included were just clarifying, I think, that he's crossed out the word Red Cross and basically just says, and Jorge Cancio and representatives from the IGO Coalition and the Red Cross. So I think that's just clarifying. He's presumably clarifying he's not just representing the Red Cross there. So other than that, that's really the only changes I thought related to the process description. Does anyone have any other changes they want to suggest to the process description? Okay. The next item on the agenda, I guess, is if someone from the GAC or the GNSO wants to explain the next steps that they think might happen after this dialogue. In other words, what does the GNSO and what does the GAC propose to do following the discussion? Maybe if James Bladel is on the phone, if he could just comment from the GNSO as chair of the GNSO.
Bruce, I don't know if you're in the Adobe. I have my hand raised. Should I just go ahead and jump in?
Yes, yes, please go ahead.
Okay, thanks. And thanks for the introduction and for setting things up, Bruce. This is James Blatel speaking for the transcript. And, of course, also present from the GNSO are Donna Austin and Heather Forrest, and Carlos as well, who is our GNSO liaison to the GAC. So just a couple of thoughts here. In building upon your introduction and perhaps expanding a couple of points or clarifying, I would like to understand the scope of this particular call and of the discussions in scheduled for Copenhagen, and whether or not we are limiting these discussions to, and I'm trying to speak in broad terms here, to the issues relating to protections of Red Cross names, or more broadly, issues related to all IGO and INGO names, including the small group proposal that was presented a few months ago.
Yeah, the intent of this call, James, is Red Cross specifically.
Thank you. And that was my understanding from the email thread as well, so thank you for clarifying that. But also for the Copenhagen discussions, we would include the broader universe of IGOs, correct?
Yeah, the intent is two separate discussions, James. So we've got a session scheduled for Saturday morning, first thing, which is talking specifically about the Red Cross identifiers. And then there's a separate session scheduled, I believe, for Sunday evening to refer to the IGOs. As they're sort of separate legal considerations, there are different treaties that relate to the Red Cross. We felt, and I think this was an outcome of the earlier week calls that we had back in December, was to keep those two discussions separate.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I appreciate that clarification. That was as we were working on the problem statement and as that particular document grew significantly, that was one of the items we wanted to make clear. I think that, you made an important point about ICANN's authority, essentially, over contracted parties and over the domain name system, in that the only legitimate way to create obligations upon domain name providers and to make those enforceable through ICANN's compliance department is via the contractual amendment processes laid out by consensus policy. There are some other ways, but they're much more convoluted, and they're all almost always temporary in nature. So I think that it's correct to say that whatever comes out of these discussions, needs to go back and follow that process, and that is the only route to certainty. Whatever is arrived upon will be executed and actually will take effect in the real world. I think that, for the most part, it's important also to reemphasize that the leadership of the GNSO is not our role to, unilaterally say, well, we agree to change our policies. It's not really something that we ought to do, and it's not something we really can do, even if we chose more correctly to note that we have opportunity to revisit policy development recommendations. But they would, I think as you pointed out, Bruce, they would involve re-engaging the community, re-convening the former members of the PDP working group, including some of the folks who perhaps might want to join, or folks maybe that had participated previously, and then of course there's no guarantee that that group would arrive at any particular outcome. They could say we changed our mind, or I think we got it right the first time, or anything in between. So I think it's important to note that we have our policy should we decide or determine that to invoke it. And then I think for procedure, for process, and not to just kind of beat process over the head, but we also have to recognize that the model allows for this when the policy recommendations from the GMSO run up against something that is perceived by the board to be a threat to the integrity of the organization or undermines the security and stability of the DNS or whatever, that the board has a mechanism by which it can send those recommendations. And I think, for example, and I'm speaking hypothetically, the board could say, we have new information. We'd like you to reconsider your recommendations as they result to, or as they apply. They could say, please go back and revisit those particular recommendations. That's something that could happen, and I think that from the perspective of many in the GNSO community, that's exactly how it should happen, is that this is not something that we should unilaterally invoke on our side to go back and revisit these things. It is something that we should, we would necessarily wait for the board to tell us to do that, because otherwise I think it starts to send a very clear signal that there is a lot of, I want to say, gray area or discretion in the GNSO processes that vests this power to amend recommendations in the chairs and vice chairs, and we frankly don't have that, and I certainly don't want future chairs and vice chairs to have that. So it makes it, I think, a much cleaner process if that is triggered coming from the board. Then finally, I just noted, Bruce, you said something about implementation. I think that's an important point. You mentioned implementation from the new GTLD program. I think that's probably not the best example to hold up as a yardstick, but it is something to consider. I think I would say I'm concerned about the weight and scope of some of the topics that are being kicked over to implementation. I think it's becoming not on this issue, but just generally. But I think it is probably the most appropriate place to address some of the concerns we saw in the problem statement. For example, the economic concerns associated with protecting these. That's not something that usually is a factor in GNSO, or let's say isn't a factor. It's not a test, I guess, to in GNSO policy development that something should or should not happen, is whether or not some party can afford to pay for, let's say a rights protection mechanism or something. It's something that could be done outside of the policy. It's something that could be done to support the policy. It's something that could be done by ICANN, contracting with third parties or whatever. But it's usually not something that would be baked into the policy itself, which then would appear in, show up in a lot of people's contracts that were not related to that economic problem that we're trying to solve. So, I'll just stop there. But I think generally that's when it comes to the scope of Red Cross names, I think that's kind of where we sit. We have a process. I think the board to take action for us to invoke that process if that is the path we choose to go down. We would need to essentially restart or, perhaps, in an abbreviated fashion, restart the PDP process that we would then, perhaps want to see most of the economic questions moved to implementation, but not some of the weightier issues associated with the protections themselves. So anyway, maybe I should ask if Heather or Donna, I know Donna was having some audio problems, but if you would like to weigh in on this. I know that in particular they have much more expertise in this area, and I think Donna's worked on this issue a lot longer, and I think Heather has almost unique familiarity with some of the legal implications involved that I don't have. So if either of you would like to weigh in, please take the floor.
Heather or Donna, did you want to comment? I think Donna's just said I have nothing to add on the Adobe chat, and nothing from Heather as well. So they both responded on Adobe chat. James, also just for the others on the call to understand, the GNSO policy development process often produce drafts, and then in response to that public feedback, the policy development process can make changes to policies. So it is a sort of an iterative process generally, isn't it?
Sorry, Bruce, I was having trouble coming offline. Did you say it was an iterative process?
Yeah, I was just wanting to be clear that just so people understand, the way the GNSO adjusts its policy, so typically in the policy process, a working group is formed. The working group puts forward proposed policy recommendations. Those are then subject to public comment, and then the working group takes those public comments into account and may adjust the policies. And then the updated policies are then put out again for public comment. So if there was a proposed change to a policy, I imagine something similar would happen in that the working group would be convened. It would look at that proposed change. It would then put that out for public comment. Is that broadly how the GNSO would make a change?
Yeah, I would kind of look in the direction of staff on this. I think that's correct, Bruce. I just blinked a minute when you said iterative, because I think that paints a picture, and perhaps because I'm coming from more of a context of a technology company where iterative means frequent small changes, and that's not how I would characterize policy development. I do believe we have a multi-phase process, whereas in the first phase we would the working group would put out an initial or a draft report with its draft recommendations, and then in response to any community feedback, that would then take that on board and go back and revisit those to make sure that it's it has incorporated all of those considerations into the recommendations in the report, revisit those recommendations if necessary, and then issue a final report. What we are talking about, however, is something that, and I don't know that it's ever been invoked before, would then follow up after that. And so this would be kind of something that happens even further out than that. And I just I wanted to point out that I kind of lost my train of thought there, but I think it's important to note that I've been speaking a little bit too long, Bruce, but I think that addresses your question about whether or not it's an iterative process. It's a two-step process. We're talking about perhaps creating a new step.
Yeah, and I think what, as a lesson learned, what we might want to do is have a dialogue like we're planning to have in Copenhagen. When there is a big or difference, let's say, between the public policy advice that we've received from the GAC and the policy recommendations, that hopefully that would get identified perhaps at that very first step, when the first policy recommendations are proposed, that I think it's called the initial report, and then maybe a dialogue would happen at that stage much earlier on rather than in this case where we're having it after the policy recommendations has been through the steps that you have suggested or that you have reported on. Is there any questions for James from others on just understanding what the GNSO will do?
Bruce, just one clarifying point. This is James speaking again. Sorry for jumping out of turn. Is that that all of that was a part of the PDP that concluded in 2013, so I don't believe we skipped any of those steps or anything like that. So just want to emphasize that. And I think that some of this, to a large extent, some of the complexities around this is that the amount of time that elapsed between the submission of these recommendations and where we are now, I think we're going on 3.5 years. So I think that, and that's water under the bridge, but I just wanted to point out that's one of the reasons why we're stuck here today.
Okay, thanks, James. Any other questions for James? Okay. Do we have someone from the GAC? I'm not sure whether we have the chair of the GAC, Thomas Schneider, or anyone else from the GAC that would like to just comment on what the GAC's process would be following the meeting in Copenhagen. Do we have Thomas? Looks like he's on the...
I'm on the phone and on Adobe. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Thomas. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Hello, everybody, first of all. And thanks to Bruce and everybody for getting this together. I must say, it's to me, listening to James, it's not really clear whatever that will be expected outcome of the status of this expected outcome of this process would be. In our situation, I'm trying to make sure that I get this right. We realize that we have differences in what we think should be the result or should be the level of protection and so on and so forth of the Red Cross names and acronyms in particular with the now 190 national parts of the movement. And in terms of what we would call a facilitation process is that some people get together that have some legitimacy to informally or formally try and find something, a middle ground, a compromise, whatever you call it, that those present in the process think that may be acceptable to the formal structures that they would then have to go back to and see whether that what they were trying to find as common ground is actually acceptable to all parties. That's at least how facilitation is done between governments when they try to come up with something that is supposed to be acceptable to all involved. So I have to admit, I'm not fully sure whether I understand James's presentation of this situation. So in case that we would start discussing things, concrete measures and so on and so forth, that we would think that may be acceptable to our constituencies, what would happen then, I'll stop here. I don't really see how to process anything substantive if we are supposed to engage, because as I said, this is from our world. When you try to facilitate something, you look for a solution informally, and then you try and get this accepted by the official channels. That's how we work, basically.
I think that's a correct characterization, Thomas. I like your wording there. It's trying to find a middle ground. You're assuming that the parties on both sides fully understand the issues and also have a good understanding of their communities, and you try and find a middle ground. And then you then need to take that middle ground back through the relevant processes if there's changes. I think my understanding of where James is coming from is just the concept that he, and I'm sure it's the same on your side, can't bind others. It's basically you still have to go back through that process to make the final decision. They can't, at the end of that discussion, say, hey, the GNSO has changed its policy.
Yeah, and Bruce, if I could respond, and I don't know, I can raise my hand, but I don't know if you're on the Adobe Connect.
Yeah,
and just to clarify, Thomas, or to at least help maybe start to bridge some of the procedural and cultural gaps between the different communities, is that Bruce is absolutely correct. We cannot, for example, as the chair and vice chairs and liaisons of the GNSO Council cannot say, hypothetically, here's the right answer, PDP. Go back and redo your work until you come up with something closer to this, because this is what we agreed upon to the GAC. We're not authorized to do this. We are – no one is. That is not how – policy development works within the GNSO, and I feel pretty strongly on a personal basis, and nor should it. but anyway, setting that aside, what we can do, and you're saying you're looking for things, for positive things, is what we can do is we can have a discussion where we examine the issues, and we can examine how the recommendations were arrived upon. We can hear concerns, I think, that are raised by yourself, by other members of the GAC and the Red Cross that says, you know, we think you got this wrong. Either you didn't consider some important factors or information. Your PDP considered them but misinterpreted them, misapplied them, or simply just missed the vote on this one. What we can do then is we can say, okay, you know, and again, we're asking the board to take action too. So we could say, you know, at this point, we think the only path forward is for us to revisit the PDP, and for that, we're going to need the board to reject the PDP recommendations that are associated with the Red Cross, and then we would go back and reconvene and present those back to our community for reconsideration and reamendment. I'm not saying this is how it's going to happen. I'm saying this is how something could happen generically. I say this because I think if you were to apply, and you mentioned the way that, you know, countries would work this out, you know, within each other. If we were to go back, let's say, with that approach, I can tell you that, first of all, we would run into a brick wall within our own community as to whether or not they would want to re-take up these issues again. But more importantly, the minute this would land, whatever outcome, whatever protections would actually happen, you know, in a registry or registrar would say, I don't believe these obligations in my contract are legitimate and I wish to challenge them. I think looking down the road, that would be a very strong argument, and that those protections would if they were arrived at in the external to our procedures, would arrive at in a sort of an extra procedural manner, that those protections would just kind of evaporate if they were challenged. And I don't think that we want that. We want whatever comes out of this process to be enforceable, to be dependable, so that the registries and registrars and the registrants understand what they can and cannot do with the DNS, that the Red Cross and associated organizations understand where their protections begin and end. And I think if that's what we're all seeking, then we have to make sure that the outcomes are legitimate and we'll stand up to those types of challenges.
Yeah, so I guess, Thomas, I think if I can just summarize what you're both saying, but what I'm hearing Thomas say is basically there's no point in having a discussion if there's no attempt to find middle ground and find a solution. So, but I'm hearing that everybody wants to find a solution, and that everyone is prepared to get together, you know, put forward the parties from the GNSO and the GAC that are most expert on this issue, and work together to find a solution and to understand each other's positions. And then what I'm hearing is that neither the GAC nor the GNSO representatives on their own can bind their respective communities. And what I'm hearing is that what the GNSO would like to get from the board would be, as a result of this discussion, this looks like a possible solution. Let's say the solution is different in some way to the policy. What the GNSO is saying, procedurally, they would prefer that the board then say, okay, on that basis, we're not going to accept your current recommendations. We want you to take this proposed solution back to your communities and discuss it and see if you can update your policy accordingly. And the process for doing that update goes through the normal process where the GNSO community would consider the proposed changes. The proposed changes then would be put out for public comment and then ultimately be approved by the GNSO Council. So it's basically a series of steps that would need to have. But the intent of the dialogue is to identify middle ground and identify
improvements, I guess, to the current proposals on the table. Is that clear for everyone now? Are you comfortable with that, Thomas? Okay, just saw your note on the Adobe. Okay, so the next topic on the agenda then was the discussion of the problem statement, and should have been clear, it's the discussion of the Red Cross problem statement in the agenda. So the problem statement's intended, whenever you sort of start getting into a discussion about a solution to problems, it's usually best to make sure that everyone agrees what the problem is first. And so the intent here was to, in sort of one or two pages, try to describe the problem in terms that could be understood not just by the parties that are expert in this field, but also by the broader members of the GAC and the broader members of the GNSO community. The main changes, I guess, we've had on this have come from the US government submitted comments, Ashley, I believe, and we also, I think there were some comments also from Jorge. Ashley, on the US government side, do you want to just comment on broadly the changes that you've suggested making to that problem statement?
Oh, sorry, bear with me. I'm having some technical issues. From our perspective, we didn't speak too substantively of the issue. It was more of a recommendation to handle a concern that Jorge had raised with respect to the language under the problem statement that says, where practicable, any protection mechanisms to be developed should take advantage of similar mechanisms that have been created for protecting other legal rights. We didn't object to Jorge's basis in that it didn't belong under the problem statement, but we also did not want to delete it outright. So we just recommended that it be moved up to the objective statement.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I can also see some changes that I thought had also come from the U.S. government. It was just sort of being a bit more specific in the language. So I think in the original text we just said legal rights of the Red Cross. And then the proposed changes looks like it's getting a lot more specific there. So it says the legal protections according to the designations Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Lion and Sun, and Red Crystal, and by implication the names of the respective components of the International Red Cross. And then I think it talks about, in the original statement, it talked about Red Cross and Red Crescent societies generally, and then the additional text is including the names of the 190 recognised societies in the relevant national languages. So it's getting a lot more specific. I didn't have an issue with that, or whether that might be better as a footnote just to try and keep the text simple. But did you have any comments on the, I guess, enumerating the language a bit further?
Just to clarify, that was not text proposed by the United States. I think something must have got crossed in the wires. The only thing that the U.S. proposed to do was to move that sentence from the problem statement up. I think that may have come from the IGOs, perhaps, or Jorge, but that did not come from the U.S.
Okay, sorry, thank you. I think I'm probably looking at documents that have been consolidated from a couple of iterations. Did anyone have any comments on that? Anyone else have any comments on just including, enumerating the language a bit further with the specifics around the names of the Red Cross societies? Any other comments on the language? I mean, I think basically I'll just work with the staff just to do an update just based on those edits. I think that's fine, just saying where practical any protection mechanism should take advantage. I think that change is fine. Most of the other changes really just seem to be some specific. I noticed that in the text there. There was 189 societies, and that's now been updated and said now 190. So I think these are mostly just factual corrections or adding a little bit more detail. But the intent of the problem statement is just a factual description of the problem. It's not intended to sort of get into proposing a solution in the problem text. Okay. Philip Corbin, did you want to speak? Sorry, I just noticed your hand in the Adobe room.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. And I'll be brief. It's been raised for a while. I had wanted to speak during our discussion of process. And the one thing I wanted to point out is that the process of necessity has to be somewhat different in regard to the Red Cross and IGO permanent protection issues, which have been the subject of disagreement between GNSO recommendations and GEC advice for more than 2 years now, and the IGO CRP issue, which is the subject of an ongoing working group. And my co-chair of that working group is also on this call and in the chat room. We certainly, at the session that discusses CRP in Denmark, are open to explaining how we got to where we are right now with our initial report, which is out for comment, and the comment period will be extended at the request of the GAC until March 30th to provide GAC members and IGOs with additional time to write, to submit comments informed by our discussions in Copenhagen. But the way that the process works, Petter and I have no authority to negotiate on behalf of the working group. We can certainly convey back to the working group information about what transpired in Copenhagen. They also have ability to be present or to monitor that. But the best way to influence our working group is to submit, is for concerned GAC members and IGOs to submit comments while our period is still open, because the process is for the working group, once the comment period closes, to review all the comments in great detail and determine whether any of them have brought new facts or new analysis to light which require a revision of our initial or an expansion of our initial recommendation. So because that's still an open and ongoing PDP, there of necessity needs to be some difference in treatment in terms of process. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Phil. Okay, so I propose I'll just work with staff just to update the, to just reissue the problem statement for the Red Cross based on the feedback we've received so far. So then the next item is I suppose really just a summary of the process that's been used so far. I'm not sure whether we want to go into too much detail. I think the main thing is we've got, there's a couple of other documents that we'll release in the next day or so that the staff have worked on. One is maybe Mary, you could just, if Mary Wong is on the call, just identify what are the next documents that we could put out for review by the group. I believe you've got a document that was talked about in December, just a bit of a very short history of how we've arrived at the different positions. And then you've got a document that attempts to summarise the legal rights protections that exist for the Red Cross. Can you just sort of confirm what documents you have and that we'll try and get those out in the next day or so?
Sure, Bruce. Hello, everybody. This is Mary from staff. And, Bruce, yes, I can confirm that staff has worked on the documents that you noted. And at the moment, as you know, they are in somewhat draft form, but from what you've said, I anticipate that we will work with you to get them into some final shape to circulate to this group, at least for an initial discussion, understanding that it's a draft and that they are intended to cover the points that you noted and that they were listed in the process framework.
Yeah, so, and again, the intent is, and I'll need to have a look at the documents, but the intent is they're intended to be relatively short, sort of briefing-type papers rather than, you know, like a full reprint of the Geneva Convention. I don't think most people are going to have time to read that, but hopefully can identify the relevant paragraphs from the Geneva Convention that are relevant in this case. So, again, the intent is they're briefing documents rather than, not intending to substitute for, reiterating the entire treaties and listing all the national laws, etc. Is that right?
Hi, Bruce. This is Mary again. That is right. It is meant to spur discussion amongst the group and certainly corrections if there's any piece of the factual history that we've left out, or that in terms of the legal summary, that there's things that could be more accurately described. And Bruce,
and in terms of the summary of the history, again, I don't think the intent is to report on every single teleconference and meeting that was happened, but the sort of broad events that have happened over time, just so that everybody is level set and understands the process. I've just lost access to my Adobe screen. Is anybody, Mary, perhaps you could help me, has anyone got their hand up or have any questions on that?
Bruce, this is Mary. Heather's got her hand up.
Heather, go ahead.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Mary, very much. I think it's great to hear that we have those briefing papers ready to go and that they'll be out in the next day or two. Bruce, I wonder if it would be possible, let's say, to delay a next version of the draft problem statement until we've seen those documents. I noted Jorge's comment in the chat that he hasn't had a chance to read the comments that James and Donna and I submitted on the problem statement. Principally, our concern was that the problem statement seems a bit more than a problem statement. And what we were asking is, you know, are there perhaps areas of overlap between this document and the next document, which is the briefing paper? It's, of course, impossible for us to say that without having seen the briefing paper, but I think it would be very helpful to the extent that we can make this draft problem statement more concise and limit it to a statement of the problem. That would be very helpful. So perhaps you had said your next step would be to work. Next step would be to work with staff to tweak the problem statement. I think it would be helpful if we could all have perhaps a chance to comment on the draft problem statement again in light of having seen the briefing paper when that's out. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. We'll have a look at that. I think in principle, we won't try and duplicate material. So I noticed, some of the edits here on the problem statement at the end are quoting sections out of the Geneva Convention and things. So, yes, that would make sense that's put in the document that explains the legal position, for example. So, we'll try and avoid duplication. And I agree with you that the general intent is to keep the problem statement, not getting it into sort of 10 pages, but to sort of try to get it to sort of ideally 2 pages or a maximum of 3 pages. So I think the intent is right. I think we want to avoid having too many iterations because we're getting very close to Copenhagen, so I want to try and close that problem statement out fairly quickly, but taking into account your advice that if there's material there that will be in the other briefing documents, let's not double up. Any other comments on the papers that Mary's talked about? We've got a general item here. I don't know whether I'll just, I guess, give an opportunity for James and GAC people just to summarise, but the agenda item is just walking through the steps that were used for the genocide policy and the GAC advice. I think we might have already covered some of this, James, but this is just agenda item 5. But did you want to give a very high-level summary of the steps the GNSO has taken to develop its policy recommendations? Maybe just a little bit of the time frame and the key documents that have been produced?
Sure, and I can do that, and also I believe we have Thomas Rickard, who was the chair of that PDP, is on audio only.
So oh, okay, if Thomas wants to...
Thomas,
yeah, but Thomas Rickard, do you want to... Yeah, either.
Okay, so generally the PDP is the process that we use. It is first launched with an initial report from staff, and then that's presented to council. Council then has a variety of thresholds by which it can vote to initiate a policy development process, assuming that that occurred, and it did in this case. It then puts out a call for volunteers. Volunteers work on the working group, you know, hopefully not too long, but in some cases they've been known to work on these things for years. And then as I mentioned earlier, the public comment is meant to course correct or offer an opportunity to course correct the work of the PDP so that if particular individuals or organizations feel that something was missed and not considered
Hi, this is Thomas.
Yeah, go ahead, Thomas.
Hello.
It's Thomas Rickett. Go ahead.
Thomas, you want to take over? Go ahead. I'm not sure if Thomas can hear us.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He came on and then disappeared again. Keep going, James. Sorry.
Yeah, we're checking his line. So, that's a very important step, and I think, unfortunately, it's sometimes viewed as a pro forma, you know, seeing for public comments, or folks believe, you know, that public comments aren't really that meaningful. But I can tell you, having worked on a number of these PDPs and chaired several of them, that the public comments is a vital step in the process to make sure that the work of the PDP is on the right track, because it is the one of the few checkpoints where the working group can go back and go back to the drawing board, as it were, and just revisit some of their assumptions and some of their analysis and rework their recommendations as a result. So the public comment is very important. That's then submitted to the GNSO. GNSO Council reviews the recommendations. But again, the GNSO Council's role here is not to assert some higher level of authority. The model gives significant deference to the work of the working group, because they're the ones that were closer to the issue and spent the most time on it. So it's not like the GNSO Council is, it's more of a process manager than any kind of a higher arbiter of what is and what isn't sound policy. And then those are submitted to the board. And that's where we've been stuck on this one since, I believe, November of 2013. From there, the board, in most cases, will accept the recommendations and then direct staff to implement them, and then the council will work with staff to convene an implementation team, and then we'll get going. And that would normally be the next step in the process here. I think the one thing that, and I don't know if Thomas Rickard is back on the line, the one thing that we should probably discuss as well is that the PDPs work on a consensus basis. They do not vote on these working groups. They do not, they make decisions based on the chair's understanding of what is or was not consensus on the group. And I think that's important because I think it's key to understand that it's not one small person, one industry, one company that can take this and let's say load it up with 30 employees and suddenly now they're driving the boat on these PDPs. It's very important for this to occur at the consensus level. And if consensus cannot be reached on a recommendation, then the chairs note that and say, look, we couldn't come to consensus on this. That doesn't mean that the working group failed. It just means that the decisions or the ideas on how to address the particular problem are divergent versus the status quo, and that therefore the status quo, whatever it is, prevails in that case. So I think there is sometimes a belief or a perception that a working group that fails to reach consensus is a broken process, but failure to reach consensus is actually another part of that process. And I don't know if Dan or Thomas is back on the line to weigh in on that, but that's generally how PDPs work, and that's how this one works, except we are stuck in that second to the last step.
Thanks, James. And Mary's just put in the chat room that the PDP on the Red Cross issue was initiated in October of 2012, and that the PDP itself concluded its recommendations in November of 2013. So, as James points out, we have had quite a gap since then, and we really just want to kind of get this issue resolved, hopefully, hopefully we can identify any changes that might be needed in Copenhagen and close the process out as quickly as possible for all parties. On the GAC side, I think we've got here Jorge, I think, probably followed the work in the GAC, or Thomas Schneider want to just give us an update on, or just really for the benefit of the GNSO members, just explain how the GAC developed its public policy advice on the topic.
Bruce, this is Thomas Rickert speaking. Sorry, my line dropped a few minutes back. I'd just like to add two or three points on how the GNSO came up with its policy recommendations. My line dropped when James spoke to this, but I guess that it might be interesting for everyone to refresh their memories on the scope of the original PDP, which was not only Red Cross, Red Crescent, but also other IGOs as well as INGOs. And we were looking at exact match protections, acronyms, as well as strings where the name in question is a prefix, infix, or a suffix. So where, in addition to that, we were looking at both preventative as well as curative aspects and concluded that the curative aspects, particularly revisiting the existing rights protection mechanisms, would be out of scope for our group. And all this process was based on trying to assess the existing legal mechanisms, the treaties, et cetera, that would be a basis for granting certain rights and protections for those names. We've asked the individual groups that were seeking protections to provide us with legal documents, national laws, international treaties, et cetera, to help us understand what the protections were. Also, we asked ICANN Legal to help with this and provide input on such analysis. And all this process, as James outlined, underwent the original PDP life cycle, including a couple of public comment periods, and working groups resolutions were unanimously adopted by the GNSO Council at the time. That does not say that the recommendations can't be revisited. James rightfully pointed out the process under which the recommendations can be revisited, but the process itself was following the PDP rules, and the mere fact that the GNSO Council unanimously adopted the recommendations speaks for itself in terms of the policy having been followed. You know, even those that did not like the way protections were granted voted the recommendations up in the GNSO Council at the time. So I guess this is just to illustrate a little bit what we did at the time. Our scope was broader, and the curative part, which was out of scope of our group, is now being dealt with in this new group. And the policy recommendations, I think it would be too much to go through them now, because what we concluded at the time, I think, is still the longest GNSO resolution in the GNSO's history. So with that, unless you have further questions, I'd like to hand it back over to you.
Thanks, Thomas. Thomas Schneider or Jorge have any comments on the GAC process?
Hi, Bruce. I have my hand up in case you don't.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
Don't worry. Well, as I think it was James who said it, this is quite some time ago. I think I remember that the Red Cross, I mean, I'm leaving the IGO part aside because, as Thomas has said, that was at that time the things were discussed at least to some extent together, so I'm leaving the IGO part aside. There were representatives from the Red Cross that participated in that PDP. May even have been Stefan, who is on the call today as well, himself. And I can't remember to what extent GAC members, i.e. governments, were actively participating in there in addition. But that was a period before my, let's say, leadership in the GAC, where the traditional understanding of the GAC was that we would not be, let's say, a formal part of a PDP, because that was a GNSO structure exercise. But we would then, once recommendations are presented to us through the board, basically give our advice to the board on legal matters of international and national law, but also on public policy aspects related on a matter. And this is basically when the GAC gave advice on these things, saying that we did not think that the recommendations, all of the recommendations coming out of this process, were sufficient in terms of legal issues and or public interest or public policy considerations that, according to the old and I think also the new bylaws, ICANN was expected to take them into account, to phrase it like this, and not wanting to start a discussion about what the bylaws now in detail mean. But this was the way that we worked at that time. We are now trying to much more engage much earlier, which is something that is not foreseen per se. We discussed this. I've raised this issue several times. It's our formal role in the bylaws is give advice to the board, and that advice to the board is on something that is has already gone through a process in one of the supporting organizations. So this is the logic of how we work. But we had people from the Red Cross, at least, in that PDP, and what we heard from them is that their proposals and their views were considered, but not, if I may use the word, their proposals or their concerns or points, not many of them did not make it, let's put it that way, in the final recommendation. I think there was a discussion about at least including some of those views in a so-called minority statement or part of minority mentioning of, but that wasn't, not all of this was reflected in the in their recommendations. And then you have the series of GAC advice since then that you all know, or if you don't know it, you know, don't remember it in detail, then this is all gathered in the collection of advice that is then looking at this from, as I said, international and national law, and also public policy, public interest point of view as giving advice to the board. I stop here. Maybe Jorge or somebody else has some additions on what I just said. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Jorge, did you have anything you wish to add?
Hello. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, please go ahead.
Hello, everybody. This is Jorge Cancio for the record. Yes, well, basically, Thomas has made the point. I just add that, of course, on IGOs, which is not the subject of today's call, already the 2007 principles of the GAC on HGPOLs mentioned them. And on the Red Cross, the story goes back to 2011 at least, where we already made mention to prior advice on the protection of the Red Cross names. And this got more specific, I guess, also as a reaction or in parallel to how the PDP Thomas Rickert mentioned progressed. And as also Thomas Schneider said, this line of advice that had been consistent in 2011-2012, then in 2013 got more specific, and then is when we had the split between the GNSO recommendations, where, as Mary reminded us in the chat, there was a minority statement from the Red Cross and another one from the IGOs. And in the following communiques in London, Los Angeles, Singapore, Dublin, we have been very consistent reminding about the Red Cross issue as a separate issue to the IGOs also. And well, the approach of the GAC on this, I think, is very well summarized in the GAC communique of Hyderabad, and also in the rationale, which we added to it, and where we mentioned the legal protections that are afforded internationally and also nationally, and also the global public interest in preventing abuse and fraud of the names of the Red Cross. Just to add also to the process, that all this line of consistent advice, of course, has been backed by a full consensus of the GAC, and this means no formal objection. And as you may understand, that is a very difficult level of agreement we have to reach each time with 170 countries in the GAC and 35 observers, and with a growing active membership at the meetings, which is growing more and more. So it's really a line of advice that is quite consistent, which has the full backing of the GAC. And this is also why we think it's really important to try to use this opportunity to find a good solution to this issue, which relates to some 100 names. Thank you.
Thanks, Jorge. James, you had your hand raised. James Blado.
Thank you, Bruce. Yeah, thank you. And this is actually going back to Thomas. And I may actually ask this question to Thomas Schneider, but maybe specifically to Thomas Rickard. Can you give us any, and recognizing that we're now almost 4 years, I am testing your memory a bit, but Thomas Schneider said that the proposals from the IGOs and the Red Cross were considered by the PDP, but ultimately did not reach consensus recommendations, and they were included in a minority report. Do you remember any of the substance of why those did not reach consensus within the working group and instead found their way into a minority report? And if you don't, I mean, it's perfectly fine to say, hey, James, that was 3 years ago. Give me a break. But I'm wondering if you have any insights into that, or if Mary or anyone can shed some light on how those were raised, but yet did not cross that threshold.
Yes, James, this is Thomas Rickard speaking. In fact, I will not be able to speak to details, but what I can say is, and this is not only for the Red Cross, but for those who were requesting protections at the time in general, we had a lot of requests that were made. The requests were going up to covering us to prevent registrations at the second level before they were made, basically. So very broad protections for second level domain registrations for variations of the strings in question. So there were a lot of technical questions up to impossibility of granting those protections, but the biggest concerns were legal concerns. We have not, or the group has not been able to validate that requested protections can be based on existing legal acts or, you know, international treaties or laws. And I guess that was the main roadblock. What I can say also is that while, as many of you will remember, granting protections to IGOs, INGOs, and INGOs was quite controversially discussed, there was an awful lot of sympathy, which you will find in the transcripts and records of our calls, where people said, well, we don't like the fact that donors' monies are being abducted, and that people are enabled to commit crimes by using such domain names. It was only the limitations that we saw in the legal basis for granting those protections that ultimately led the group to turn down the requests that were made. I apologize for keeping it that superficially. I'm sure that Mary will be able to speak to much more details because I hope that she has the documents in front of her.
Okay, thanks, Thomas. All right, so I think in terms of next steps, it's certainly not the intent of this call to sort of go in and start solving the problem. The next steps is I'll work with Mary to get a set of documents out, hopefully within the next 24 hours or so, which will be an updated problem statement, a sort of summary of the history and taking into account the information that we've received from James Bladell and Thomas Rickard from the GNSO and from Thomas Schneider and Jorge Cancio from the GAC, and just their summary of how we've got to the current positions. So we'll get that into a document, and we'll get a summary of the legal information specifically on the Red Cross, the treaty information and the legal information, how it's handled in national laws, out to the group for comment. Hopefully, if you can send your comments back on those documents fairly quickly. The aim, I think, would be at least by Monday next week that we can start sending these documents out more broadly to GAC members and GNSO Council members. Does anyone have any other questions or comments they want to make? James, it looks like your hand's raised again.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. James speaking. And so I just, you were mentioning earlier, first of all, thank you. I think that's a good path forward. I think that, as a bit of a babe in the woods when it comes to these issues, I have a question because I'm hearing from the folks from Jorge and from Thomas that what prompted the GAC advice on this issue was that, you know, that the Red Cross, the legal foundations for the Red Cross to have these protections is fairly slam dunk. And what I'm hearing from Thomas Rickard is that these were considered by the PDP working group and they were either, not as clear cut or not as broad or applicable to this situation or whatever. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer in this area. This is outside of my field of expertise. But what I am hearing here is sort of, a difference of understanding of a very critical set of facts. So my question to you and to ICANN staff is, can we get those facts? Can we, as part of the briefing paper, whether that comes from some sort of outside, expertise or something, can we get some sort of conclusive opinion that we can all agree on? Because I'm afraid that we're kind of just circling that problem right now. If everybody believes that they're kind of standing on a different set of facts, then I think the problem statement is challenged right out of the gate. I think that we want to solve this. So it feels to me like a missing piece. And if I'm completely missing the boat on this, I apologize for taking us off course. But it seems like a divergent line of discussion that I'm hearing from two different sides. Thanks.
The missing fact. I'm missing the point, I think. James, you're saying you think there's some missing facts that are needed. That's definitely what we want to capture in these documents that we're going to get out. So,
Yeah, and maybe I'm going a step ahead of the problem statement, Bruce, and I apologize to everyone on the call if I'm doing so. But I heard two, I think, very important statements, Thomas Rickert and from, I believe it was Thomas Schneider, and they seem to be at odds, and I don't know if we can work to bridge those two contexts, then maybe we can sort of blaze a trail forward to progress on this issue. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Look, if you can put it in writing what you think the difference is between those two positions, we can attempt to clarify that in email. But the basic steps, I think, certainly we want to identify the GNSO policy recommendations, the GAC advice, and have that clearly stated, and also identify the legal factual position as well. Stefan Hankins from the Red Cross, I think, have your hand raised as well. Do you want to go ahead, Stefan?
Yes, thank you very much. I don't know whether you can hear me. I'm very far away.
Yes,
in the Middle East.
We can hear you.
Okay. So thank you very, very much for the opportunity to take part in this call in turn from the side of the Red Cross Red Crescent. This has indeed been a very long journey, and I do note that we are still held up on issues really that have been, discussed at very length and on which, there's been, very repeated and firm GAC advice. I would like to maybe join in the previous speaker. I think it is important indeed that before Copenhagen and based on the documents that the ICANN staff is going to produce, we do not retread grounds that you know it already been discussed at length at the time. I think when we look back at the PDP several years ago, I think there were a number of reasons why, you know, the part of the Red Cross, Red Crescent requests at the time, you know, could not be taken on board. But I think in quite some degree, it was also linked, as I think Thomas Rickard was also hinting, it was very much linked to the fact that at the time there was great confusion on a series of parallel requests that had been made and parallel examinations. If some of you will recall that the Red Cross, Red Crescent protections that were called for, and you know, which are grounded in clear-cut international law provisions, were meshed up with other requests under considerations. Even the International Olympic Committee at the time was also mixed up with this. And of course, there was also a degree of confusion with the claims of the IGOs, and we were never able, on the many calls that took place at the time, to kind of be able to redirect a little bit the consideration and to separate the issues as they would need to be. We had at the time submitted quite a number of materials, two very detailed reports. To the board, and then, you know, lists of legislation in over 125 countries which protect the Red Cross, Red Crescent designations, you know, a series of very detailed legal argumentaries which, you know, we call the legal regimes. So, you know, I do think it is extremely important that, you know, for the discussion in Copenhagen, you know, there be clarity on what is going to happen. Is this really just an information session, or, you know, are there going to be, you know, is there going to be the possibility for, you know, a real substantive discussion? And certainly, you know, the materials that are to be produced, I think it's important that, you know, the different parties be able to review them and comment on them so that, you know, the legal arguments are properly framed. You know, again, you know, the Red Cross, Red Crescent designations, they are firmly protected under universally agreed public international law treaties. And, of course, we have also submitted also, as confirmed in repeated GAC advice, you know, a number of public policy considerations for these protections to be recognized. The last point that I wanted to mention is just to speak to some of the earlier comments that were made on this call, again, we're raising this issue of what, you know, might trigger or what should trigger a GNSO potential reconsideration of adopted policy, you know, this notion that, you know, what would trigger that is a request from the board. I just want to remind that there have been quite a number of recent positions and communications from the board, which do express the expectation that the Red Cross, Red Crescent protections issue, you know, be resolved. There was a call on 27th of October 2016, which confirmed the imperative of reaching a conclusion on the issue. And, you know, this was also repeated in a number of communications, which I believe have been circulated within the community between the board and the ICRC, the Red Cross, Red Crescent. So I think that, you know, we shouldn't enter Copenhagen with a doubt about the trigger, in my view. We need now to advance on the substance, and then, you know, have the conversation. But I agree with what was said. We really need to have, you know, clear materials to substantiate the conversation that needs to take place in Copenhagen, including clarity on the legal arguments. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stefan, and yes, definitely the summary of the legal position will be available for you to review. It will be posted to the mailing list in the next day or so, and be open for review to make sure that it's factually correct as an input document to the meeting in Copenhagen. And yes, I'm definitely wanting to cover a lot of the positions in these briefing documents so that we don't spend 2 hours, you know, in an information session, but we actually spend the time that we have together in Copenhagen to actually work together to reach a solution. Thomas Schneider, you had your hand raised.
Yeah, yes, thank you, Bruce. I think listening to Stefan, I think it's obvious that we all, at least those who are in this now for a longer period of time, we have made some learning curve because I don't think that all of us, at least in the GAC, but that's probably also for others, where 5 years ago we were experts on the legal protection of be it IGOs or be it the Red Cross, and that now that we are slightly more wise than maybe 5 years ago, if we had dealt with this separately from the beginning, some confusion, I'm not even talking about the Olympic Committee and their protections, some confusions would have been easier to avoid, and maybe the answers would have been clearer or simpler, and we may be at a different place where we are now, but that's part of working with on new ground so that we all can keep learning. what I wanted to say is that I think responding to Mary, yes, we do understand that this paper is not supposed to be a legal analysis. But I think as Stefan has said, with the Red Cross, that the legal situation is different and maybe clearer than with the IGO protection, where it comes to interpretations of the Paris Convention and so on and so forth, where there are divergence of views that would need to be taken into account. The legal basis for the Red Cross is fairly clear, as Stefan has said, so I think we should just make sure that all of this is there. It doesn't have to be in the problem statement or in the document that you are working on, but it needs to be in the background material that we have at our disposal when going into substance. And we also, I guess, and thanks to Thomas Rickert for laying out or hinting at the deliberations that the working group that he chaired underwent when they were working on this, that we have to see what the legal basis are. We also have to acknowledge, and Thomas Rickert referred to that, what is public interest, what is public policy, that may be a broader issue than just legal basis, because new laws or new rules are created every day, and there's good reasons for this, because the world is moving on. And then legal basis also get updated or modified according to new developments. So it is good that we have the full documentation as background material that we can refer to if necessary, but that while at the same time having a shorter document that basically outlines the big lines or the big lines of where we are, why we how we got where we are. So I think it's good to have both, to have like a shorter document plus all the material at our hands when we enter at the moment when we enter into substantive discussions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Thomas. And I think what we could do in the shorter document that the staff have been working on, we can certainly have explicit references, I guess, to the documents that have previously been submitted that have, you know, far more detailed legal analysis in them. Okay. Any other questions or comments before we wrap up? One thing that occurs to me, the meeting on the Red Cross specifically, the broader session is scheduled for Saturday morning. I'm planning to arrive in Copenhagen on Thursday night, and I'm happy to meet. It might be useful, Mary, if we just sort of get an idea of who from the GNSO and who from the GAC would be the main participants. And maybe we get together on Friday afternoon for those that are available, just to sort of run through the sort of speaking list and schedule, and just talk through the planning of the meeting on Saturday morning, if people would find that useful. Yeah, thanks. I just saw your note there on the Adobe list, Mary. Yeah, so that's perhaps if we can confirm who the participants are that will basically be sitting around the table for Saturday morning. And then we might just get to get together and just identify a bit of a speaking order and just so everyone's clear on what their roles are for the Saturday morning. I can see Phil Corbin and James are typing as what's coming up on the chat session. Okay, so the GNSO, it's James, Heather, Donna, and Carlos will participate. Okay. And then Thomas and Phil. Okay. Thomas Schneider, yes, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Bruce. Just trying to ask for clarity with regard to these two distinct issues that we have somehow like a tandem or whatever you call it. I think also taking into account the confusions that we had before this call, I think it would be good if you could be as clear as you can when planning for these meetings to see what part of the meeting or what meeting is on the IGO protection and what other part or what other meeting is on the Red Cross, because it may not be 100% the same people from our side. So I assume that the IGOs won't participate necessarily, although we can remain on the same mailing list, but they may not necessarily participate in the Red Cross discussion and the other way around, and maybe in the GNSO, it's also those who are working on one issue are not necessarily working on the other. So that we're clear, all of us are clear, basically what is going to be discussed. I hope that makes my point clear. Thank you.
It does, yeah. Thank you, Thomas. I'll endeavour to be very clear on the two separate discussions and when those separate meetings will be occurring. And Peter Rinthorpe has asked for the agenda for Saturday morning. So, yeah, we'll work on that and put a draft agenda for the list to consider as well. I'll try and get that out early next week. Any other questions? Okay, at that point then, I'll thank everybody for participating and providing their perspectives. And look forward to finalising the documents in the next few days and having a productive discussion in Copenhagen, and I'll see you there. Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Operator Jonah, if you can please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.